Welcome to Yoel's Hangouts podcast. We got J-Bay in the building back on. We're live again. Thank you for allowing us to be heard by you guys. We know it's been a while, but just to keep you guys in the loop, I'm doing more in between these, in between streams and podcasts. I'm doing more curated content. So certain topics I want to cover, certain stories I want to cover. Maybe it's history, maybe it's just like maybe a current event that I want to like dive deeper into and want to understand better. And that way, by doing that, I kind of can create a base of knowledge that I want to show people, or, you know, have a way to communicate that and make content out of it. And also it helps me remember, like doing like mini documentary style videos that force me to research. They help me kind of understand the topic in a more concise way and help me like retain it rather than just watching like a quick video about it. Making it, editing it makes it like ingrained in my soul, ingrained in my brain, like all the hours in front of it. But yeah, J-Bay, how you feeling, man? How was your Christmas?
Good. It was good. Had a nice time spending it with family and friends too. Unfortunately, you weren't able to be there. You or Jax. But no, it was good. Yeah, I enjoyed the family time, man. How was yours?
It was not. It's like Christmas is like non-existent in Israel. It was very sad. Yep. Like it was probably one of the more. I wasn't saying I'm sad, but it was like one of the more eye-opening things. Mm-hmm. Of like, I mean, there's obviously cultural differences between Israel, yeah, and the U.S., but that was one of the more like, whoa, like. This is, yep, different. Like, even if you're secular, obviously, you know, Christmas is about the birth of Jesus, but you know, everybody celebrates. It's in the fabric of the Western culture and American culture specifically. So it definitely was a big wake-up call as far as, hey, you know, do you want your kids to be raised around this? Like, are these the things that you're willing to deprive, you know, your future generations? You know, the holidays are a wonderful time, and they're, yep, a time where family gets together. We have that here. We have holidays where families get together, but Christmas has a special magic to it. It's a special situation, even outside of the family time, even outside of the religious aspect, mm-hmm, to it. So it was definitely like a big wake-up call, like, whoa, like, this is really, oh, like, it's dead here.
Do you think that was the first culture shock, like, that you've had since being there?
I don't think culture shock, just like, because I've had like culture shock where like no one around you speaks English, like you, mm-hmm, can't get around, like, you know, you're like trying to talk to, like, you know, but culture shock in the sense of really hitting home of a large aspect of your culture not being there and will continue to not be there, because the language thing, you know, you can kind of getting around. You know, finding your places to go for certain things, being able to navigate, that's a culture shock that will go away, yeah, from through adaptation. But this is one of the culture shock wake-up calls that I know will not go away, because, I mean, ain't nobody going to celebrate Christmas here anytime soon. I don't think so. Yeah. It was definitely a big wake-up call for sure.
That's wild. In the Philippines,
culture shock.
In the Philippines, they have this thing called Burr. So all the Burr months, starting in September through December.
Like Burr, like cold?
B-E-R, like September, October, they call them Burr.
Oh, okay.
They all celebrate, okay. It's just Christmas stuff that whole time. Christmas lights, Christmas caroling, all that stuff. So it's like a big thing. It's a big thing in the Philippines.
That's cool. I like that. Yeah. That's it's cool experiencing different cultures. Like it's cool. I mean, there's trade-offs anywhere you go. There's trade-offs. Like there's no, yeah, place where, like, even living in Portland and then living in LA, there's trade-offs. Like there's things that you like about Portland that aren't going to be there in LA. There's things you like about LA that won't be there in Portland. There's things that are here that will not be there in Los Angeles and in Portland, you know? So anywhere you go, it's not going to be perfect, but weighing out the pros and cons about your future is, you know, the key thing, what you want to do in the future. And you can always move, you know, I'm not scared of moving, but I definitely want to have stability, you know, wherever, yeah, I'm going to be. I don't want to just like bounce around a ton of different places.
Yeah. Makes sense.
You know what I'm saying? But all right, guys. So today, dang, I broke my rule. I like to announce what we're going to do before we get into the conversation, but it's not too late. Today, we're going to be talking about two different videos, responding to two. First video is just an interesting bite-sized video of what Jews need to know about the Quran, even though, you know, I'm the only Jew culturally in this conversation. Maybe there's some watching, but it's just a cool kind of like informative video that I think will be interesting. And then the next video is going to be capitalism versus communism. This is, you know, Ty Lopez? I'm sure you do. Look at cars.
Yeah. Cars and the books. Yeah. He has this like, bookshelf in his garage.
Yeah. Knowledge. He went viral for that. He was actually super random. He was one of the panelists for the capitalist side. And then, like, obviously, I don't know if you've seen these Jubilee videos, but they have, like, two sides, maybe, like, three or four people on each side that are, like, the opposite perspective on a particular topic. Mm-hmm. And then they, like, debate, and then they had covered different questions. So he was actually on one side. He didn't speak much because it's kind of, like, I don't know, it gets really weird, but... Yeah. It was just kind of an interesting video that I want you to get your perspective on, but we're going to do the Quran one first. We're going to try to power through it. Let's see. Pull it up.
Century. Nothing is more dangerous than ignorance. And the most dangerous kind of ignorance for Jews is ignorance of Islam. Islam has a lot to say about various groups, Jews, Christians, polytheists, women, and so on. And it's important for these groups to understand what Islam says about them, because what Islam says about them will have an ever-increasing impact on their groups as Islam spreads. The Quran contains numerous verses about Jews, some nice and some not so nice, and the Quran's claims about Jews have been affecting Jewish-Muslim relations.
By the way, this guy is a guy that grew up, sorry, I didn't really give you an intro about this guy. I don't know. Have you seen this guy's videos before?
No, never.
So he's a guy that does a lot of apologetic stuff. Obviously, mm-hmm. It's in his name, Apologetics Roadshow. But he was a guy that grew up, you know, not in a religious home or anything. It was, like, pretty secular. He was in college with a guy that he was a Christian that grew up in a Muslim home. But he was roommates with the guy that, man, I forget his name. But he's a really popular apologetics guy that, you know, kind of spread the gospel to a lot of Muslims. But through that, I guess he kind of created his own niche, which is like he understands Islam like very well and does a lot of debates against Muslims. And he's a Christian himself, but he does a lot of like shows and collabs with other creators. He's actually pretty funny. This is like more of his curated stuff where you can tell he's like more prepared, but his streams are pretty funny. Like, he's a pretty funny guy, but he's really knowledgeable about Islam, essentially. So, yeah.
I think that's what a lot of, like, Christians – I don't really know too much about the Jewish community if you guys know a lot about Islam, but I think that's one thing Christians lack is the understanding of other religions.
Yeah. Well, they don't even – I mean, a lot of people lack understanding in even just their religion, let alone theirs and others. You know, it's a lot of it's a lot of stuff to go through, you know, especially like going through Islam. Like, dude, like I have no actual, you know, interest. I guess like, yeah, interest. Exactly. So not only is there that a barrier, the other barrier is like, it's a huge book. It's a large text that I'm not interested in. So it's like, it makes it pretty difficult to set the time out of your day to do that. So, I mean, I kind of get it, but also, it's like, if it's cool not knowing, but the level of confidence that a lot of people have speaking about these, and myself included back in the day, thinking I understood certain things when I really didn't, I think is like can be dangerous. Like a lot of people that maybe are atheists are like, oh, you know, all these religions are the same, and you know, this religion's like this, and you know, we just need to get rid of all religion. And there's just like certain blanket statements that people put over like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam that I'm just like, dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
When I was an atheist, that's what I thought too. So, like, that's the exact same thing. I was like, no, they're all the same. There's like just minor differences. But then, like, once you start learning a little bit more, you're like, okay, there's actually like really big differences.
Yeah. Like, I would say I was a Christian, but I was more like, I definitely believed in God, but I was like, okay, like maybe I'll be Jewish. Maybe I'll be Christian. Like, it's all of this. Like, I was kind of in the, you know, new age camp of like, you know, well, we're all worshiping the same God, like kumbaya, like it's all pretty much the same thing, you know, but you know, the devil's in the details, right? Literally, it can be found in the details. So, I definitely feel you on that. Like before you know, you think you know, but you may not know as much as you think you know, you know?
Yeah.
Dang, I said a lot of you knows.
You know?
For 14 centuries. For Jewish viewers who would like to know what Islam says about them, but don't have much time to study the Muslim sources, I've put together the shortest possible list of relevant Quran verses. There are dozens of Quran verses about Jews that we could examine, but we're going to focus on just three, all from the same chapter, Surah 5. Keep in mind that we'll only be talking about what Islam, an ideology, claims, not what a particular Muslim believes. If you're a Jew, you may have a Muslim friend or co-worker who's the nicest person in the world and who has no problem with you or with your religion or with Israel.
You know what's really funny about covering stuff about Islam too? Is they all like those videos that I do about Islam, they always perform really well and they always get the most comments of Muslims around the world, like being like, oh, it's not true, blah blah blah, like, you know, this isn't right. But like they don't know that literally them going in the comments and like going hard and like commenting all of them, it like pushes it to more people. So like they end up pushing the content to like, I'm saying like 10 times more people than people would have seen it if they just would have not commented.
Yeah.
Which is like, if you know social media, it's like hilarious, but it's like something they don't understand. It's
crazy. Well, that's like it's like controversy drives views. And it's like, you always see like people are like, I like when the haters comment because you still are bumping me up in the algorithm.
And like by a lot, like look at this video, like his channel's only 150,000 subscribers, which is great, but to be getting almost a million views on a 13-minute video 2 weeks ago, like that's only because, like, bro, I haven't even seen the comments, but I bet it's like insane the amount he has.
You know,
bro, almost 10,000 comments.
Oh yeah,
that's insane. Yeah, like it's just, and it's pushing it. So yeah, it's funny. Just a side note.
We're not discussing what individuals believe. We're discussing what Islam teaches. And we can get a nice overview by reading just...
And it's all like, this is wrong. That's not what it says. Like, you're lying. Like, but let's get a real Muslim in there. It's like, yeah, exactly. Like, I know the comments because those are the comments that I had when I put someone that's like an expert on Islam on my podcast. Like, I'm like, bruh. Like, it's never like, oh, no, you misinterpreted that, because if you put it in context... It's like all like you're wrong, blah, blah, blah. Like no actual like proof that it's wrong. It's just accusations without.
Either that or they'll start attacking the Bible and be like, well, in the Bible, they'll X, Y, Z. And you're like, bro, we're not even talking about the Bible right now.
it's automatically
start to like, oh, well, yours teaches hate and whatever, whatever. I don't know. It's funny. It's just funny listening to people debate.
Yeah, like, I mean, I did it a lot. Bro, by the way, I saw today that Sean King's Instagram got suspended. So, like, you can't even search it. It's no longer there. So he went from blocking me to now his channel suspended, which I don't even know, but my assumption is the amount of, like, dead people that he posts on his channel, like, in the amount of violence that he posts on his channel is, like, it's, like, very, like, Telegram-worthy, but, like, obviously, like, Instagram has... It's freaking rules. Like you can't show like dead people and like stuff like that. So I assume that's what it is, but obviously he's like martyred now. And they're like, oh, you know, they don't want you to hear. They don't want to know the truth. You know, they you know, Zuckerberg, that Jew, like he always trying to, you know,
you already know the talking points. It's rallying him right now. They're starting to radicalize. Dude,
everyone's like he's our guy, like he's even though, bro, the amount of money he probably made in the last like 2 months off of like doubling his viewer count must be insane.
Dude, okay. Speaking of like radicalization and being martyred, have you seen that new Netflix thing that people are talking about?
No.
I think it's the show like Barack Obama produced or something like that. I'll have to find
it. Oh, yeah, actually. Yeah, I have.
I forgot what it's called, but I don't know. I think next year might be a wild year. I could see it
becoming wild. I think it for sure will be. I've been saying it for a while, but like, dude, it's like a like. It's funny. I'm like in Israel, and I'm saying it might be a crazy year for y'all. I'm like more worried about the U.S. Like, I didn't know the lengths that they would go through to keep Trump out of office, but
yeah.
Now I'm realizing it's like I already knew they were dark. I already knew they'll kill anybody, and they don't care how many people in order to stay in power. But there's something about the establishment deep state that they're just like, dude, we don't care. Like, we're gonna do whatever it takes. And that's scary when like you expose someone and then they kind of fail to psyop you, and now they're going like desperate mode. And now they like have to make it happen because they showed their face. Like, what do you think is going to happen? That's what I want to know, because I have my suspicions, but what do you think is going to happen next?
This
upcoming year?
I don't know. I truly think it'll be similar to what 2020 was, where there was a lot of protests.
Like some sort of shutdown.
No, I don't necessarily think there's going to be a shutdown, but I do think there's going to be a lot more protests, but I don't know. I just have it in me that like humanity will prevail, and I doubt we'll get to that point where it's like we're fighting or like, you know, the protests. I think that's as violent as it'll get. I don't think it'll get any more violent than that. I just can't see United States citizens doing that to each other.
Yeah, like civil war type.
Yeah, I don't know though. I don't know. I mean, I'm always hoping for
the best. I don't know. I think it's going to be, I mean, I'll say what I think based off of what I'm seeing will happen. And then what I think they will try to do. I think that they will try to do some sort of lockdown. I don't know why, but if they don't, like, I'm okay being wrong. I think there will be another, I think they will try to lock Trump up or prevent him from being president. Like, literally, he will get votes and they will create an insurrection in the sense of they're such deflectors. Like, they will do what they accused him of doing, which is he's gonna win by a landslide, but they're gonna be like, oh no, actually you didn't win. And then what they're gonna do is, and then people are going to probably get mad, and then they'd probably get violent, and then they're going to say that Trump made them get violent. Like, I think it will kind of maybe be a repeat of last time, which is going to be some sort of entrapment. And then look what you did. You made them, storm the Capitol or storm, you know, whatever it may be. Yeah. So, man, I think it's going to be a really dark time, but I don't know about civil war. I don't think it'll get to that point. I don't think people are really wanting to do that and two, willing to do that.
Yeah. I could just see states. If that happens, I could see states wanting to secede.
Yeah. Florida may be maybe, but not even, I don't know which states though, you know,
Texas for sure.
Yeah. Texas maybe could.
I think a lot of those southern states would try to.
I think they would on the surface. I think like a lot of the governors aren't as like willing to play ball with the feds as we want. Like, think about it. Like the amount of illegals that have come through the border and like they claim to be like right-wing Republican America first, and like they're still seeing this happen and not doing anything, especially Texas, right? So, like, dude, like, if you've been letting this happen for this long, like, you clearly don't feel, like, you're not about that life as much as you want to make it seem like that. Like, you still are doing whatever the federal government wants you to do, which is, hey, just let them through. That's what, you know, that's what Big Daddy wants. He wants all these, you know, people to come through. So, I don't think they're, like, as patriots or Republicans as much as people want to think that they are. I think it's, like, a lot darker. And maybe people want to admit because the federal, I mean, dude, they got the military. Think if Texas was like, yeah, we don't want to be a part of the U.S. Like, nah, I don't think that that's going to happen. I think the U.S. is going to say, nah, you one of us. And they're going to bring their guns. They're going to bring their drones. They're going to bring their pilots. They're going to bring their helicopters. They're going to bring their any other weaponry that they have. And then their Texas is going to be like, well, we don't really have anything, so I don't know.
See, but I just don't see – I don't see troops attacking U.S. citizens either. Like, I just don't see that happening. I don't. I have a hard time seeing them.
I don't want to see it.
Yeah. I have a hard time seeing them do it, though.
Well, if you consider them a – if you, see, this is what they're trying to psyop, though. They're trying to say, oh, well, you know, these are terrorists. They're – you know, they're trying to classify Trumpers especially as terrorists, as domestic terrorists. Yeah. They say white Christian nationalists are the number one
threat
to America. Those are the words that came out of Biden's mouth. So if that's really what they think, I mean, you can say to the military, hey, these are terrorists. Like, you know, they try to overthrow the government. Which is hilarious. Like, to any sane person that hasn't been completely psyoped, like, and as someone that lives in Israel where people, there's actual violence, there's actual, like, insurrection of borders, there's actual, like, extreme levels of violence, like, it's like a laugh for anybody that comes into America that isn't American to see that and be like, bruh, you don't know what insurrection and, like, trying to conquer a territory really means. Like, that's a joke, but they perpetuate the lies, and it's just it's I don't know, we'll see what happens. I think it's gonna be an interesting year. I don't know what's gonna happen. Vivek though. I think Vivek is a big mouthpiece to get everybody, like, he's almost like an educator of the darkness in the government, which I like he's speaking on certain things that Trump was, but Trump has been kind of quiet about things, not as loud as maybe he is right now on like all platforms.
He doesn't need to be here.
Yeah, but I don't.
Popularity.
Yeah, but I like people having the humility, you know, to be like, hey, you know, I'm still campaigning out here. I'm still putting in work, which
he's
I think he is.
He's still campaigning. He's just not throwing out like those controversial topics anymore. I think everybody kind of knows him. And he's kind of just.
And it's early, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we good. Man, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see. I'm just like holding my breath to see what happens. Do you think U.S. will be in a war with like either Iran, for sure Houthis, or Russia even? A lot of people have been saying Russia.
Maybe. I mean, it's a possibility. I know.
Yeah, we'll see.
There was a statistic saying like presidents in wars always get reelected or something like that. Or like a high percentage of presidents during wartime that are up for reelection.
Because I think people get scared, right? Like people get scared and they play defense kind of.
Yeah. They don't want too much change.
But,
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see, dude, because I don't know. The things that are happening are getting weird. Like the level of aggression towards Russia through Ukraine and through like funding Ukraine has been very, very odd to see, to say the least.
Yeah.
We'll see. All right, let's keep watching this.
Three verses. Our first verse is Surah 5, verse 32. Even if you've never studied Islam, you've probably heard part of this verse at some point because it's one of the most frequently quoted Quran verses in the West. After every Islamic terrorist attack, politicians and journalists remind us that such attacks are un-Islamic because the Quran declares that if anyone kills a man, it's as if he's killed all mankind. They never quote the complete verse, of course, and they almost never give the reference because if they gave the reference, someone might read the complete verse and, even worse, might read the very next verse. Watch what happens when we read the entire verse. This is how Surah 5, verse 32 is usually quoted to us by politicians and journalists. If anyone killed a person, it would be as if he killed all mankind. Sometimes they include a bit more, telling us that the Quran says, if anyone killed a person, it would be as if he killed all mankind. And if anyone saved a life, it would be as if he saved the life of all mankind. But let's see what politicians and journalists leave out. Because of that, we ordained for the children of Israel that if anyone killed a person, not in retaliation of murder or to spread mischief in the land, it would be as if he killed all mankind. And if anyone saved a life, it would be as if he saved the life of all mankind. And indeed, there came to them our messengers with clear proofs, evidences, and signs. Even then, after that, many of them continued to exceed the limits, e.g. by doing oppression unjustly and exceeding beyond the limits set by Allah by committing the major sins in the land. Notice four things about this verse. One, the Quran says that this was a revelation for Jews, the children of Israel. We ordained for the children of Israel that if anyone killed a person, not in retaliation of murder or to spread mischief in the land, it would be as if he killed all mankind. And we know what the Quran is referring to here. This is a quotation from a Jewish rabbi in the Talmud. The Quran says that Allah ordained this for the children of Israel. Politicians and journalists omit the part about the children of Israel so that they can pretend that Islam calls for endless peace and tolerance. Meanwhile, the very next verse, Surah 5, verse 33, is a revelation for Muslims, and it commands Muslims to dismember and kill and crucify all kinds of people. So 533 justifies terrorism. Politicians and journalists ignore it and go to 532. They do a bit of editing, and there you have it. Islam is a religion of peace. Two, since this is the standard verse quoted by Muslim apologists and politicians and journalists to show that Islam is a religion of peace, we should always point out that the most peaceful verse in the Quran is actually a quotation from the Talmud. Three, the Quran says that this Jewish teaching is a revelation from Allah. So according to the Quran, the Talmud, or at least a portion of it, is a revelation from Allah, just as the Torah and the Gospel, according to the Quran, are revelations from Allah. Commentary from a rabbi in the Talmud is revelation from Allah. Good to know. Four, the Quran says that there was an exception to the rule against killing and that Jews could execute people for spreading mischief in the land. If anyone killed a person not in retaliation of murder or to spread mischief in the land, it would be as if he killed all mankind. So Jews, according to the Quran, had authority from Allah to carry out capital punishment for certain crimes committed in the land. Pop quiz for those of you who read the Quran. Which land is the Quran referring to here? Is it A, Canada, B, China, C, Switzerland, or D, Israel? Allah, according to the Quran, gave the children of Israel authority over the land of Israel. Yes, Allah is a Zionist who says that the children of Israel have the right to punish people for spreading mischief in the land. Can you think of anyone who's been spreading mischief in the land? Next verse, Surah 5, verse 43. The historical background of this verse is that some Jews came to Muhammad to judge a dispute. Allah responded by saying to Muhammad, "But how do they come to you, Muhammad, for decision while they have the Torah, in which is the plain decision of Allah? Yet even after that, they turn away, for they are not really believers." Allah wanted to know why Jews would come to Muhammad when they already had the Torah. Muhammad gives a dramatic illustration of Allah's point in Sunan Abu Dawud 44:49, where we see Muhammad's reaction to the Jews coming to him for judgment. In 7th century Arabia, the person who judged a dispute would sit on a judgment cushion. Watch what Muhammad does. They set out a cushion for the messenger of Allah, and he sat on it. Then he said, "Bring me the Torah." It was brought, and he took the cushion from beneath him and placed the Torah on it and said, "I believe in you and in the one who revealed you." So the Jews bring a copy of the Torah. Muhammad takes the judgment cushion out from under him and puts the Torah on the judgment cushion. Muhammad speaks to the Torah and says, "I believe in you and in the one who revealed you." According to the Quran, do Jews need Muhammad's revelations? No, because they already have the Torah. The Quran, then, is useless to Jews according to the Quran itself. Notice also that both Muhammad and Allah affirm the inspiration, preservation, and continuing authority of the Torah. Third verse, Surah 5, verse 82. "Verily, you will find the strongest among men in enmity to the believers, i.e. Muslims, the Jews, and those who are al-mushrikun." Mushrikun are people who associate partners with Allah. "And you will find the nearest in love to the believers, i.e. Muslims, those who say, 'We are Christians.' That is because amongst them are priests and monks, and they are not proud." So the greatest enemies of Muslims, according to Surah 5, verse 82 of the Quran, are Jews and those who associate partners with Allah. And the closest in love to Muslims are Christians. Oddly enough, Jews and Christians are different groups from mushriks here. Jews and Christians don't associate partners with Allah. Later in the Quran, when Allah has to justify violently subjugating Jews and Christians, he declares that Jews and Christians are, in fact, mushriks. It's interesting how Allah's eternal word, the Quran, changed depending on how Muhammad was feeling. When Muhammad began receiving revelations in Mecca, the message of the Quran was, "It's Muslims, Jews, and Christians united as monotheists against the polytheists." Later, Muhammad and his followers moved to Medina, and it was a very important test for Muhammad because he had just spent a decade telling his followers that the Jews would accept him as a prophet. Muhammad had assured his followers that there were prophecies about him in the Torah, book of "Trust Me, Bro," chapter "Just Take My Word for It." But now that the Muslim community had moved to Medina, where there were three tribes of Jews, Muslims finally had an opportunity to see if Muhammad was right. In a shocking blow to Muhammad's ego, the Jews rejected him as a prophet and mocked him for his ignorance. That's when the message of the Quran changed to Muslims and Christians are united against pagans and Jews, as we read in Surah 5, verse 82. Eventually, Christians also rejected him as a prophet. So the message of Islam became, it's Muslims against everyone. So Surah 5, verse 82 is from the middle period when there was still hope that Christians would accept Muhammad. Again, it's strange that an eternal book.
That's what I heard that before.
Yeah, I heard that too, that like at the beginning when he wasn't getting any like any followers or anything, he was like mostly like a peaceful message. But then later in the book, once he started getting more like following, he was asking for more division and like violence. And like one of the, I'm not 100% sure the verse or whatever, but it was like, if you don't have the upper hand, choose peace. But if you have the upper hand, choose violence.
Yeah, I heard that too. Yeah, I heard, I mean, in the beginning, he didn't really have, like he didn't really have as much negative experiences with Jews and Christians because he was trying to still be on good terms with them in order for them to accept him as a prophet. But they were like, nah, G, you're not a prophet. We know you're not a prophet.
Yeah.
And like, because one, you need like proof. Like proof is actually more important than most atheists think that Christians need in order to say that you're a prophet. But yeah, it's just, and then like gradually he just became more and more bitter, and then he got more and more power, and then he's like, nah, we got to get rid of these niggas pretty much.
Yeah, that's wild.
Would be so heavily influenced by Muhammad's interactions with non-Muslims. Sadly, the Quran's claim that Jews are among the greatest enemies of Islam because they rejected Muhammad has had a lasting impact on many Muslims and even on their view of future events. In Sahih Muslim, number 7339, Muhammad says, the hour, the day of judgment, will not begin until the Muslims fight the Jews and the Muslims will kill them, until a Jew hides behind a rock or a tree and the rock or tree will say, O Muslim, O slave of Allah, there is a Jew behind me, come and kill him. Putting all of this together, the Quran says that Jews were given not only revelations from Allah, including the Torah and the Talmud, but also a piece of land where Jews can enforce their laws against those who make mischief. The Quran says that Jews don't need Muhammad because they have the Torah, the inspired, preserved, authoritative word of Allah. But for some reason, even though Muhammad and the Quran are useless to Jews, they're still supposed to acknowledge Muhammad as a prophet. Since they don't, Islam declares that Jews will be the enemies of Muslims until...
It kind of makes sense why he thinks this way.
Who, Muhammad,
when you
or
know that he, yeah when you know that he wanted to be a prophet, like why he's saying like yeah you know Abraham was a Muslim, you know, the Torah is the word of Allah, you know, the New Testament, the Gospels are the word of Allah, you know, because he wants to like graft his perspective into the religion rather than be a separate religion.
Yep.
You know that he's trying to like combine it and be a prophet. So that's why it makes sense. Like before it didn't really make sense. Like there's a method to his stupidity and the method to the madness.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, most people are like, okay, well, I'm trying to start a cult. I'm trying to start a religion. Like, let me make this a separate religion to have it not be influenced or be connected to anything else in order to, you know, kind of distinguish myself from it. So it makes sense why he did that now, because he realized, oh, he was trying to claim himself as a prophet of those religions, but then it didn't work. So then he was kind of stuck saying those things about the other religions, and then he became his own religion, and then he had to kind of double down and be like, oh, no, they got it wrong. Like, we got it right. This is the Talmud. This is the Gospels. This is, you know, Abraham's teachings from the beginning that I received from Allah. So it does make sense once you understand his motive, how he got to the place that he kind of got to, I guess.
Yeah.
Muslims kill them to usher in the end times. Not very comforting, but that's what we find when we read the Muslim sources. Now, if I were a Jew and I knew what Islam...
I've heard that verse before, though. Like, there's a Jew, come find him. The hour will not come until, you know, everyone says, oh, look, there's a Jew. Like, yeah, like, bro, like, you put those in a text that people really believe in. Like, if anything like that was in the Bible or in the Torah, like, bruh, it'd be way more violent of a religion. Like, it just would be. Like, let's just keep it real. Like, it just, if that verse right there, even just that one, was anywhere in the Torah, anywhere in the Gospels, like, even something similar like that, it's just human nature. Like, people want, like, especially being part of a eschatology, I think is what it's called, the studying of the end times, even if it was part of the end times of the whole religion, like, dude, I mean, yeah, like, I don't even, yeah, you'd see a lot of people being like, hey, look, you know, it's part of the program, you know.
Yeah.
We got to do it. We got to make it happen. So,
yeah.
Some teaches about Jews, and I saw the impact that Muhammad's teachings have on the world, I would probably spend some time responding to what the Quran says about me and my family and my community. And if anyone asked me, why are you criticizing the Quran? I would calmly reply, look, the Quran talked about me and my family and my community long before I said a word about the Quran. And if you don't think that I have every right to respond to Islam's most trusted sources calling for our violent subjugation, you have my full permission to cry me a river. I am not, never have been, and never will be your Dhimmi. Deal with it.
Dhimmi, he's funny.
Yeah.
He's actually part, like, he's actually.
He reminds me like Elon in that last part where he's like, go fuck yourself. Yeah, no.
He's nerd funny. He's nerd funny for show. Like, he's definitely like a very like dry sarcasm type of guy, which is cool.
Yeah.
He does. It's funny. He does a segment called Jihad, Jihad Daily or Jihad Weekly or something like that, where every week they sit together and go over the news stories that were not told by mainstream news because it would be deemed as like racist and Islamophobic. So they cover these news stories about just like blatant acts of jihad in Europe and all around the world. And it's like this buttoned up like guy in a suit who's like studying, who studied Islam, wrote all these books. And then like him, who's like got this like really dark humor, and like just seeing them interact is like hilarious. Cause he'll just say the most wild stuff. And like the nerd, like not the nerd, but like the scholar guy will just like laugh like a little kid. It's like the funniest. It's actually like a really funny segment that I like to watch. But
yeah.
We're going to watch this. We're not going to like watch the whole thing. I actually want to cut towards the end because actually we'll bounce around different.
Let's just watch the bits.
Different topics. Let's do the beginning, and then I'll bounce around to ones to areas that I like. It's nice that they have the timestamps.
You do want to argue. You want to make your point about you make it back. And then you're going to try to say it's too spicy for me. No, I got you.
This black dude's like corny.
Capitalism coming in and enshrining.
Oh, I got focus.
Got rid of it and started pushing back against a centuries-old awful institution. So to say it's capitalism, I think it's honestly offensive.
We are approaching the 150th episode of Middleground, and we need your help to continue making more episodes. Join our Middleground Patreon community and help us write the future of Middleground.
America would be a more powerful country under communism.
I think it would be a lot better for all the people who are working jobs that are not, I guess, tech, basically. So I make content, which means that I work a lot of hours and I don't pay the same amount as a soft dev. So I think it would create more creativity in certain like creative industries, artists. If you make a bigger pie, everyone gets a bigger slice.
Yeah. I think one of the main misconceptions about communism is that it's just making everybody equally poor. When Marx and Engels wrote repeatedly that the first step under communism is increasing the productive forces. In the US, over 80% of our population is living.
It's funny how like they always like communists and Marxists always reference the books, but never reference it being applied to actual societies and actual countries because they have no good track record of it.
No, like, there's no successful.
We didn't get it right. You don't get it. We never even like I heard someone say like we've never had a communist country. We've never had a socialist country like. It's like, bro, we never got there because it was awful.
Yeah. There's a reason why we didn't get there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Paycheck to paycheck. If you provide people's basic needs, if you invest in economic growth and in jobs and in infrastructure rather than investing in endless war and massacring Muslim people in Gaza, you're going to make this country a lot stronger. You're going to make the people a lot more stable here.
I grew up in the White Ring area. I grew up in Denver, Colorado. I was born in Dallas, Texas. I'm the first American in my family. Everybody's from Congo. If my family was able to come here, of course it would have some capitalist connection. So I grew up very much with the idea that everything I need is under capitalism. Individualism, freedom, all these things are under capitalism. But I'm black in America. So those contradictions really just create that friction where I'm like, this doesn't align with what I was told and what I'm actually seeing or actually feeling. So why did I come to communism? When I actually read it, when I went from Marx to Lenin to Mao to Deng to Fred Hampton, I started realizing like, oh, this is patriotism. This is the idea that I look at another American and think to myself, I want you to be fed. I want you to feel fulfilled in your life. I want you to feel like you actually have control within your society. Honestly, as somebody again who grew up in that right-wing area, that flies over everything says.
Disagreeers are walking quick on this one. Can I say something first on this one to be so bold? Here's my argument. How come every communistic country has to build a wall or a fence to keep people in? China ain't letting people out. My grandma, I remember going. Yeah, but where did you come? But where did you come? There's not a mass immigration into Venezuela, into China, into Russia. Where do people want to go? Switzerland, America, Sweden. They're all talking about, we need to build a wall because people are coming. China's not going, well, we better build a wall because all those Americans are coming across. Nobody's going there.
So you legally cannot become Chinese. I went to international school growing up, and every single non-Asian or anyone else that's like American or Canadian that's gone to China has never wanted to come back to the US. That's something that's really interesting. So I think it's like, if you've never been.
That's an adverse.
I don't think that's true. Also, Hong Kong was like its own little area.
Yeah.
And people really liked being there because it wasn't even part of China. Like, you could actually build your own business and actually like, like, that's what's hilarious. The only part of China people wanted to go to was the part that was like more Americanized and capitalistic.
Yeah.
It's like, people are so stupid. It's like, oh, you can't leave. You can't even be Chinese if you tried. It's like, nigga, no one wants their everything tracked and have a credit credit score, whatever. It's crazy. Yeah, I kind of like watched this and like just got mad. So I don't think we're not going to be able to get through all of this. I actually watched all of it, but I still need to like rewatch it because I was getting like kind of mad. But I want to hear your take on it. It's funny. What?
I said control your emotions.
I mean, I didn't get like mad. I just got annoyed. No. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I do need to, we all need to control our emotions.
Election, a group of people who are already.
Your point. Yeah. Like, I guess like whoever has the open mind to go visit usually doesn't want to come back. And I do live streaming. So I know a lot of live streamers who like permanently move over to the, like Asia, especially China, because not just it's cheaper, it's also just higher benefits.
Whoa. Asia. She said a lot of people that move to Asia, China. It's like, You got to be very like, I know a lot of people that want to move to Japan, love Japan. You know, South Korea,
Indonesia. A lot of people like bloggers go to Indonesia.
Yeah, like Thailand, like bro, I know a lot of Israelis that go there. I know an Israeli that lives there right now. That's my friend, and she loves it. You know, but we talking about China specifically.
Yeah.
So she better watch her tone. You know what I'm saying?
Gotta check it.
Like free healthcare, so it's a lot easier for you to survive there. I think it's not because people don't want to go. It's also because you're taught propaganda since a young age. China's scary, China's bad, evil, red dragon. So people don't go and don't even go see it.
Red dragon.
I would definitely argue that a lot of China's success is due to the introduction of free markets. But if we want to run with this idea that China's a socialist country, which is just fundamentally untrue, I could also just point to the fact that they're super low on the HDI. Their GDP per capita is like $12,000. The US GDP per capita is $70,000. So like, I would say in terms of like economic success, we're definitely doing way better.
Ty, in terms of how we see immigration into this country, of course, we're American. We're only going to see the American viewpoints of this. China has immigration. People do try to cross the Chinese border all the time. We're all humans. Everybody's doing the same thing around the world. I would say what you're saying
from North Korea
perspective issue. I would love to break it down even more and talk to you about the.
That's actually true. Like that was one of you know that girl from that girl that like does public speaking that was in North Korea that has like this incredible story about like escaping China. Like, bro, she escaped North Korea and went to China. I was like, yes, I'm in China because like North Korea is like next level hell.
Yeah, she was on the Sean Ryan podcast talking about it. And then I watched a documentary. There's actually like, was it in China or Russia? But there's like North Korean camps in one of those in Russia. There's North Korean camps in Russia that where they like do like lumber and they just do like a bunch of weird stuff out there. Yeah.
Dang. Yeah. Ain't nobody. Like it's heaven compared to North Korea, I bet. But ain't nobody like from South Korea. Like, yes, I'm in China. Thank God. Like, no, hell no.
The amount of CIA missions that have gone through Latin America to destabilize those countries. But just at that point, to what you were saying, judging a country by how much the wealthiest people in their country profit in their company, we both know what GDP means. It's a bad way to really explain.
What about HDI? Human Development Index.
And
so it's measured by things like health, income. It's the UN standard for like how well an economy is doing.
So from that point, perfect. Healthcare, we rank 37 in the United States. Cuba ranks 2.
Oh, God. Sure. Yeah. And Hold on.
Cuba ranks what? Cuba ranks what? Wait, I really want to get
They've been number one and number two in the health review response.
Cuba uses
according to the Commonwealth Fund.
Cuba is 83 on the HDI. They use their doctors like slaves because 90% of the profit goes to the state.
They literally traffic their doctors. When George W. Bush opened up a program, he'll let Cuban doctors escape because they were trafficking them and making them go do these PR campaigns in other countries to give healthcare. 7,000 people immediately came to the U.S. At one meeting, two doctors passed notes to other doctors they were on a hospital set with and said, kidnapped.
I appreciate the emotional examples.
It's not emotional. You can talk to the No Border Sovereignty organization that works to get healthcare professionals out of here.
You're the nicest person in this room.
I'm trying to get this point across too.
Don't answer.
But please go.
What did he say?
You're the nicest person in this room. Well, I've been told.
He's so like condescending.
That
yeah. Can you rewind it?
They're doing this super scary.
Yeah. Let me do. Yeah, they like bounce around a lot. That's what makes
you like 1.25. Yeah, because my brain can't process it that fast, especially with him mumbling.
Yeah, we know you're slow.
7,000 people immediately came to us. At one meeting, two doctors passed notes to other doctors they were on a hospital set with and said, kidnapped. This is propaganda.
So I appreciate the emotional example. 100%.
It's not emotional. You can talk to the No Border Sovereignty organization that works to get healthcare professionals out of there.
I'm the nicest person in this room. I'm trying to get this point across too. Well, I've been told that fear is happening in Cuba. They're doing the super, super, super scary thing with Cuba, which is great. I would love facts. So
I'm giving you facts about doctors fleeing the country and also about how they're having to ration basic antibiotics in their hospitals.
Yeah, we've got them under an embargo.
Medical things are excluded since 1992.
That's not true. That's been disproven by multiple studies.
Why did communists always do this?
I missed.
They always take like. What?
I missed what the dude in the pink said.
He said, we have them under embargo.
Oh.
Like, America has them under embargo. Like, they always want to, like...
They want to look at the result. They look at the result of what we did and act like we did it first, but it was a reaction to what they're doing. Does that make sense?
Well, no, I think it's even, like, more blanket. I think it's, like, big, bad, bigger, stronger country. If they're involved negatively with another country... Everything that goes wrong with the smaller country is because of the big, bad, rich country.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's our fault they're that way rather than the other way around.
Yeah, like this is what they, but this is how they think. Like, if you, like, I've been studying Marxism like so much, like lately, I don't know, I've just like started to nerd out. Yeah. And like, this, everything's about power and like hierarchy. So if you're a powerful country, you're inherently immoral, you're inherently oppressive because of your power.
Yeah.
You know, so because that's how they think. They think if nothing, if it's unbalanced and there's one country more powerful than another, that means the powerful country got there immorally, like inherently. Yeah. So they,
well, they think about that on the individual level too.
Yeah. Yeah. So everything that they hear is things to affirm their point, right? Everything that they hear is, this is how the country got there. Look at all the, look at bad thing one, bad thing two, bad thing three. This is how they got there. It wasn't through any other means other than, you know, sanctions. It wasn't through any other means other than cheating. It wasn't through any other means other than, you know, killing. You know, that's it. So, I mean, that's just how they think. So it makes sense that they randomly apply it to every conversation, even though when, if you look at the facts, it is actually not true. It might be true in certain areas, but
yeah,
for the most part, it's not true.
Yeah.
This year during COVID, Cuba made their own COVID vaccine because the U.S. pharmaceutical company used intellectual property laws to prevent them from making this, using our vaccine recipe. So they created their own, but they couldn't get syringes into the country because of the embargo. Because how are you supposed to get metal when you're on a tiny island country and you're surrounded by the U.S. military?
Eddie,
and you can't
you
get any trade in.
I want to ask you a few questions. How far back do you think the embargo is affecting Cuba?
How long back do I think the embargo, like, probably like since it's been put on?
Oh, really?
But so, I think when we look at...
No, let me respond real quick. In 1960, the USSR became the largest trading partner with Cuba. They started paying more for
Cuba's sugar. Yeah.
They started buying all of Cuba's sugars and paying more than the United States was paying. Fidel Castro is on record saying that the embargo had no effect on Cuba at all. So we can presume that up until 1991, when the USSR collapsed, that it didn't have an effect. So to claim that the embargo is affecting Cuba...
When we look at countries like Cuba and China, I think it's more important to judge them based on what they had before the revolution. Before Cuba had a revolution, nobody had access to healthcare. They were working on slave plantations that were dominated by Western multinational corporations.
See?
China before the revolution, yes, there were famines during the era of Mao. There were far more famines before Mao came to power and before China was able to industrialize and get to the point today where they're now one of the most powerful countries on earth. In the 1950s, the U.S. was already industrialized. China had to do that. They were a semi-feudal country in extreme poverty. And in just 70 plus years, they've become this economic.
See, that's the issue. What do you do when the country you're rooting for that wasn't powerful becomes powerful through the means that you deem as bad, which is capitalism?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't even know what he's saying right now. He's pretty much saying, like, yeah, big, bad, strong America was doing all these bad things, keeping the Cuban man down. But then, you know, they let go of their claws and then they elevated themselves through exclusively capitalism to get to a position where they're, I mean, China's going to, you know, maybe be more powerful than the U.S., who knows? And then what? Oh, okay, well, you know, now we deem them as bad. You know, China's now bad because they're a powerful country.
Yeah. It's but like they're almost, you know, rooting for the underdog. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, that is confusing. But it's like a terrible example is like with Taylor Swift becoming a billionaire. A lot of like people who hate billionaires are like, oh my God, Taylor Swift's a billionaire. I'm like flexing it. And everyone's like, I thought you guys hated billionaires. And they're like, well, she did it like morally correct. And it's like, what are you talking about here? Like, yeah.
Did I tell you that story about the girl, the manager at the ice cream shop in DC?
No.
Did I tell you about any story? Bruh, this made me laugh. And like, my cousins didn't know why I was so angry. I wasn't like angry, you know me. Like, me angry is like not that angry. No. But so I was having a conversation with her. She was like maybe 21 years old. She had just graduated, I think. I was there for a graduation for my cousin. And she had just graduated. College educated young woman. I want to make that clear. She was the manager of this ice cream shop. It's like, it's called like Van something. It's similar to like Salt and Straw type of vibe.
Oh,
it's like
Van Leeuwen? Young hip.
I think it's Van Leeuwen. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And we're just talking, you know, and I was like, oh, like, what's the backstory of this ice cream shop? And they're like, yeah, you know, so there was these two guys, they were bankers in Wall Street, New York. And, you know, they wanted to start it, you know, they wanted to quit their jobs. They wanted to, you know, escape capitalism. So they started their own business and started this ice cream shop. And like, my brain was like,
what?
They wanted to escape capitalism? What do you like?
So they're like, actively capitalism?
And she said it like with such like
conviction,
confidence. I was like, I don't think you know what you just said, but like, this is how they think. Like, it's not even about what capitalism actually means. It's just the concept of like capitalism has a face to it, and they arbitrarily apply it to a particular race, a particular industry, you know, a particular demographic that runs that particular industry.
I think when they look at capitalism, they look at it as like, it's the Fortune 500 companies, it's the people in power, and everything outside of that is communism. Like,
it's they see it as a white man.
Yep.
First of all, man. Now it's the smoke's on for all men now. It got crazy. At first it was just whites, then it was white men, then it was men. I saw this whole thing progress, you know. We know we're Oregon boys. And now it's Christian. But if you're a white man Christian, dude.
Yeah, you're asking for it. You're asking for it.
Crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that, and you know, obviously it's dominated by those types of people. You know, Wall Street, you see white men with their privilege. But if you're a minority and you made your money, if you're a woman and you made your money, like Taylor Swift, you got to remember, once you see things how they see things, it makes more sense. You're like, oh, well, Taylor Swift did it the ethical way because she had to fight being a woman in a male-dominated industry.
Yep.
So it's actually like much more organized and much more, you know, there's actually a method to these things. There are books written on why Taylor Swift is actually justified in making the money that she's making because she's a woman and because she had to go through a lot to make her money being a woman.
Yeah.
So it's not actually being because if a man artist would have made that much money, they kind of would have been like, but if The Weeknd does it, he's black. So he's kind of, you know,
he's okay. But he's not as safe. Yeah. If it's like Justin Bieber, especially when he was like fuckboy shit. Oh my God.
Like, and he's a Christian.
Yeah.
They'll have smoke. They'll have smoke for him if he hits that B word. You know what I'm saying? They will have smoke for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't get through that whole thing. I'm gonna go crazy. But anything else you wanted to cover? Because I'm not gonna watch that whole thing.
No, I think I'm good. I'm good.
Cool. All right, guys, like the video, subscribe if you're not already subscribed. We're going to keep these things going. The holidays are kind of over. Look out for the kind of shorter documentaries that I've been wanting to do. I don't want to just wait on people, wait on J-Bay, wait on, you know, guests to do stuff. I want to be, you know, in the mix. I want to be still editing, using my skills that I have in editing to, you know, put out, continually put out content when I have the time. So look out for that. I'll try to like label it different so you know what it is when I post it to differentiate from my other content. But yeah, J-Bay, anything else you want to say? You know, Happy New Year, bro.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Hopefully you guys find God. Hopefully you guys have set some good goals. I'm not a big like believer in the new year. I think it's just another day. But I think it's a good time to set goals though.
Let's get rich, bro. Screw the economy. Let's get rich 2024. Let's make that money. Yoel's open for business. I'm going to start blowing up my my media company. I actually just got an email, funny enough, about work. But yeah, this year's the year.
Push that merch out. Push the merch.
Nah.
Let's get some merch going.
Merch. I got too many things I'm doing.
Fair.
This year, make that money, grow the agency and make content consistently for myself. Podcast had a good year, you know, no complaints. It had a good year, but next year looking to continue to grow. I'm in no rush. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy making content. I enjoy having conversations. I enjoy researching and doing the work. It's just getting around to it, making the time. And yeah, personal life, you know, we'll see if, you know, if I get married this year, who knows?
Yeah, that
maybe
personal
my time life, will come.
That personal life.
You got to get married too. J-Bay too is going to get married this year. You know, we'll see. We'll see. Anything's possible.
Hey, I wouldn't say I'd get married, but find a serious girlfriend, maybe.
Why? Why are you? Why would you wait if you find that girl? Are you the type to date for years? I'm not, dude. I'm really not. Any relationship. I promise you one thing. I'm not the date for years guy. I'm just not that guy. I'm too lazy. I'm like, hey, are we doing this? Okay, let's go. If not, bro, I'm not about to like play house. I'm too lazy.
I'll date for years.
I can't play house, bro.
I'll date for years.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I'll date for years.
I don't know how you guys do it.
Well, because, dude, okay, completely honest, I'm scared because some girls can put on the front. And, I mean, it's hard to, like, especially at the beginning of a relationship, I'd say
but give it. But what's, like, another year, you know? Like, well, like my thing is, like, if you ain't got it right now, if you're having second thoughts about her character after a year, that's a major issue.
I wouldn't even say second thoughts. It's just double checking, just being aware. You're still, like, making sure she's consistent in what she was doing before, type of thing. And then I think it's fair. She should be judging me. She should be making sure I'm consistent. Because at the beginning, during that honeymoon stage, that first like 3 months, everything's fine. Then that second 3 months, the real personality starts to come out a little bit more. You can still hold on to it for another year or two.
But what's the real person? Like, I mean, that's with anybody though.
It is. Like you start to act after a while, after those stress tests, when you're like, oh, this is the real you, that's when you get to see. And I just think it takes time. I just don't find a rush in it. That's another thing is I'm not like, oh, I need to get married now. It's kind of like I can wait.
I'm not either. I mean, especially when you get in the cookie already, you know what I'm saying? You don't care. You know, but I'm saying like if I want to have kids. I want to have kids, you know, at a decent age, you know. I don't want to be old dad.
What are you looking for in a mother? And how can you find that out so soon?
I think people show themselves in ways outside of the relationship of how they're going to be with you long term. Like, how are they treating their family members? How are they treating the waiters? How are they treating their friends? How are they treating their siblings? You know, how are they at work? Do they complain all the time? Like, there's areas of their lives that you can address where they don't have to put their interview personality on that will tell you more about that person than necessarily, like, you know, how they are with you. Because how they are with you, bro, they like you, bro. They're going to always act different. And that's eventually going to fade. But you know, how are they with their friends? How are they with their, how do they speak about their friends? How do they speak about their family? How, you know, do they actually show up to work? Do they, you know, do they go the extra mile? Are they thoughtful? You know, and not with me, because I know they will with me because they're trying to impress me because they're dating me.
And exactly. And especially at the beginning, they're going to always talk highly about their friends. They're going to probably act a little bit different around their friends when you're around. Like, it just takes a little bit of time for them to like get more comfortable and then kind of like let their guard down or get like their interview brain out of the way. And then you see the real them. Sometimes it takes longer than others. Yeah. I just like to double check and take my
time. I look at the mother too. I try to see how she is with her mom. Mm-hmm. I try to see the dynamic between the mom and the dad, because that's huge. Like how her mom treats her dad is how she's going to treat you. That's what she knows for the most part. That's what, unless she really makes a conscious effort to deviate, that's what she feels comfortable doing. You know, that's how she feels is normal. Everyone's normal is different, even though we think it's normal, right? So I pay attention to that. And bro, you don't need a year to like, if you know what to look for, I don't think you need a year. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I usually look for the mother. I look for the mother. This is really shallow. I look for the mother to see how she looks like when she's older.
Oh, that's off rip. Of course. That's important too, but you know, if you want to have an idea of like, you know, like for me, like even if like the mother, like is the mother being, I'm not saying she got to be skinny, but is she like super overweight? Like this is going to sound awful. Like, and I don't really care if she's like super overweight. That means she clearly does not, you know, make that a priority for like having health is like, I'm not saying I'm skinny. I'm just saying, do you make an effort to stay in decent shape? I'm not even saying super fat. I'm not even saying like super skinny. I'm saying, do you make an effort? Does the mom make an effort? Because unless that girl, her daughter, is like active and you see her being active or you see her watching her weight, the probability that she's going to end up looking like that because she's not making a conscious effort to stay active is really, really high. And I've seen this in my own life in the sense of seeing a girl in like college or high school and then seeing her mom and then being like, I knew these things like ahead of time, like even in middle school, high school. And then seeing her mom be like, oh, dang, like this is probably what she's going to look like, even though she's a twig right now.
Can I get an example?
End up looking like that.
Can I get an example of someone we know from college that's Please. Happened to? No, I'm asking you. Can I get an example?
Oh, I don't really think. No, these are like.
Just random.
Well, one girl that I did actually date for a brief time. See her mom and I was like, oh. Yeah. But like a brief time, like we were just like talking and went on a couple of dates. But, and I saw her mom and I was like, and she's cute. But like, I was like, I'm not even kidding. I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm willing to roll the dice. Like that was that big of a deal. I didn't say anything to her, but, and then high school, I know a couple girls that like, they were twigs. And it's for some reason, the twigs that it happens to, because they don't really feel like they need to try to stay skinny or like build good habits to stay skinny. Yep. And then they end up getting older, and then you know the metabolism comes in, and you know it just becomes hard.
Yeah. No,
I'm not about to name drop, bro. You think I'm crazy? That's so foul.
I know. No, but I think good motherly traits, someone nurturing, and someone just sweet. I mean, for the most part, I think a lot of the girls that I've dated in the past were just like super sweet girls, and I mean you've met a decent amount of them, and they've all been just like sweet girls, kind hearted. And so, I mean, I it's not like I don't know what I'm looking for. It's just, I just have a hard time. Like, here's another thing. I have a hard time committing too. Like, I won't even lie. I have a hard time committing. So it's hard for me to just like jump in there like 6 months down the road and be like, let's get married. It's like, whoa, let's take it easy here. Let's really make sure.
Yeah. No, I'm saying like, I guess I filter more on the front end and pay attention more to things on the front end, to where I'm going to be more keen on certain things and more interested in certain things that are important to me ahead of time, even before we date. Like I get to the, like I start asking like crazy questions, like up front, like I don't care. Like, because I'm just like, bruh, like I'm not trying to, like it's weird. It's actually weirder. It's going to be weirder asking later because emotions are involved. You like each other. You're going to feel more like uncomfortable, or like it's going to be easier to put those questions off. So it's easier to ask them up front to where when both you guys are kind of more relaxed, there's not as much like at stake as far as caring about each other. because there's things I know I can't do. And a lot of it, bro, you're looking at friends.
The questions you're asking about, I kind of know what you're like asking. I think those questions just come up like you're dating, like, hey, you've already asked her, like, will you be my girlfriend? You guys are dating. It's been like a month or two. I think after that month, I think that's when you can start like being like, hey, like, how do you feel about this? What about this and that? That's when I do it. That's when I do it. It's like serious. It's like a serious relationship, but it's not too serious to where you can just walk away. It's like, I've only dated you for a month. Like,
yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. I would not do that, bro. That's why people date for so long. I don't want to date for a long time, dude. I don't want to waste my time. And it's like, we had a great time. We had fun. We didn't waste our time. How can you go back and say you wasted your time when you cared about somebody and you guys had all these great experiences? I get it, bro. I'm just saying. Some people might say that.
Yeah.
I'm saying you could be spending that time with somebody that did pass those things that are aligned with your values, big value traits that you find are important. That you know, at the end of the day, bro, you're not trying to fight with your shorty about that. Mm. When you have kids, when you have serious bills coming up, you know, I'm not about to get out of bed, you know, stop what I'm doing for work, go out, like pick up a girl that like I know her values do not line up with me, take her out for dinner, spend 2-3 hours with her, pay for dinner, and like all for like investing in a relationship that I know ultimately will not last.
Stop talking at me. It's like you're taking shots at me right now.
No, passionate. It's fun. And I'm standing at my standing desk. So
It's just funny.
What were you gonna say?
No, it's just funny because that's, I mean, most of the girls here. I mean, most girls that I've dated, our values have been similar. One thing I have realized, you don't really have to convince a girl in our like to have the same values as us. I think if they like you enough and if you can explain it well enough, I think girls are a little like very understanding. And I think if you can explain it to them,
like they'll follow your lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially when they really like you. And it's not even like on some like, hey, this is what we believe in. It's like she has like a natural inclination to be curious about it and then want to know more and want to understand.
I would say yes if we didn't live in 2024. Like the issue with that is I agree. Like in our parents' age, I would agree with you because they like the women have more respect for the man. They have more. They play more of the role of, hey, if your perspective makes sense as the dude, like she'll follow you. Like she got married because she, you know, she saw you as a leader. She saw you as somebody that she wants to lead the family, to be the man of the household. But the perspective now is not that. That's why I genuinely think you need somebody that aligns with your values up front.
From the jump, yeah. It's tough.
There's the rare exceptions that do, you know, deviate. Yeah. But bro, if she already doesn't think that way, it's so hard in the modern culture. Like, it's so hard.
It is hard. I mean, like most of the girls.
Life's hard, nigga.
Yeah, I know. But most of the girls I've talked to are like ultra liberals, like OD.
Yeah.
And we've talked about them. And it's like OD. So like, we've had like good conversation and then I know I've changed some of their views on certain topics, but I mean, I think it could still happen.
You need to go to the country. You need to go to the country, bro. If you want those girls, you need to go where I grew up. You need to go to like Minvale and like, what do you call it? Like Monmouth, like, you know, Lafayette, like all those small tiny towns. Like you're going to find you a good girl out there. They don't even talk like that.
Yeah, it's a little tough going to the bars in Portland. I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, they're just
– yeah, Portland's the last place. Like, as bad as it was when I went to school there and, like, was going out there consistently, how liberal it was, I'm sure now it's, like
– oh, it is
OD. Intolerable.
It's OD. It's OD. It's kind of like, whoa, this is, like, a new thing. Like, whoa, this is wild. But, I mean, they just –
you got to weaponize it, though. You gotta weaponize your blackness. Yeah, but you gotta weaponize your blackness. As a minority, I hate how my perspectives are not valued, and my values are conservative.
So
and if I feel that way. I just want to live my truth. And as a white man, you've oppressed me from being able to express myself as a black man.
No, that's a thing that I've been using that, like, because they can't say I'm racist or anything. So that's like off jump. I'm like, look, and I think it kind of helps them. It makes it easier to hear conservative values coming from a minority than it does from a straight white man. So I think that's why they're a little bit more welcoming and understanding.
Because you don't benefit from it.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't benefit from the conservatives.
I still have to battle racism. So, you know,
bro, it's so funny, dude. Like I love my favorite is like, I still feel like this is crazy. Like when white people speak on behalf of black people, like I still don't understand how, like the level of balls that someone feels like has to speak on behalf of another race is like. I'm like, bro, how do you get up at like in the morning and like, yeah, I'm going to speak on behalf of a race that isn't like, dude, I don't understand
it. I think I sent you the tweet where someone was like, black people can't succeed in a merit-based system. So we need affirmative action. And in my head, I'm just like, it's almost like patronizing like, where I'm always like, yep, we can't, we're not good enough to succeed in a merit base. We need this affirmative action. That's true. You're correct. Like they don't even see how like condescending I am and like sarcastic I am, but it's like wild.
They're just it's just so comfortable. Like I saw the leaks of my lip. Like I had like maybe I was maybe 20% liberal and like 80% conservative, but then the BLM protests happened. Mm-hmm. And like the amount of people because I was in LA and I protested, quote unquote, I went on a walk in, you know, West LA, and the level of like fake love I saw there was like crazy. Like people that genuinely do not care about black people. And I know they don't care about black people because I've been black around them the whole time I've known them. And they've never spoken or cared about black people. So,
dude,
and I'm not looking for special treatment, but don't try to act like, oh yeah, I love black people.
Well, it's like that one thing where it's like you get like these like liberals who are like, oh, and racism. I'm not racist. How can anybody be racist? Then you look at all their friends and there's just a bunch of like white girls and white dudes and they're just hanging around that white people 24/7. Yeah. And then it's like dudes are like, oh, yeah, I am me personally. I'm not racist, but the meme said they were racist. And then they have like a super diverse group of friends. But like that's like you. It's really weird seeing liberal. Especially liberal cities. So Salem's a little bit more conservative, but Portland's a lot more liberal, right? And there's certain areas where you kind of get stereotypical people and everybody kind of is the same. One of my cousins came down to Salem and he was like, dude, this is like the weirdest thing ever. Cause like it's our bars and stuff are super diverse. You'll get so many different kinds of people. You'll get black cowboys. You'll get like bikers. You'll get
in Salem.
Thugs, like gangbangers and all. Yeah, in Salem. And like everybody like intermingles and then we're a little bit more conservative, but you let the media tell it we're more racist, but we're not. I mean, we're just used to everybody and everybody like takes care of their own.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. Like, I mean, it is white, I would say, but like, bro, not everywhere can be LA, New York, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's going to be that way. Like, not everywhere's Miami, but there's a ton of like Mexicans, black people, like, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's super diverse. So yeah, no, I get what you're saying, but all right, man, let's wrap it up. We'll talk for forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, subscribe, like the video, look out for more content. We are out. Peace.